Hi, it's Radhika Jones, Editor-in-Chief of Vanity Fair. As we gear up for award season, there's no better time to join us. By becoming a Vanity Fair subscriber, you'll gain exclusive access to our in-depth coverage of film, television, and the best of Hollywood. And that's just the beginning. Vanity Fair takes you inside the worlds of entertainment, culture, politics, and scandal, bringing you iconic images, era-defining stories, and much more. Get 15% off a year of digital access to Vanity Fair by visiting vanityfair.com and using promo code POD15 at checkout. That's vanityfair.com, promo code POD15, for 15% off a full year of insights and exclusive digital access. Subscribe now.
Hello and welcome to Little Gold Men, the award season podcast from Vanity Fair.
It's such an honor to present this next award.
And here are the nominees.
And the Oscar goes to...
And the Oscar goes to...
And I can't deny the fact that you like me right now. You like me.
I'm the king of the world.
There's a mistake. Moonlight, you guys won Best Picture.
I'm Katie Rich, the deputy editor of VanityFair.com, and I'm here for our special Emmy Nominations Day conversation with our senior writer, Joanna Robinson.
Hi, Katie.
And joining us again, we have our TV critic, Sonia Soraya.
Hi.
And our Hollywood editor, Hillary Busis.
Hello.
So we're a few hours removed from the Emmy nominations. We've all taken some time to process it, figure out who we're mourning for, who we're excited about. Hillary, you have been kind of, assigning and editing all the stories about it. So for you, what's kind of the story of these Emmy nominations, if there's one big takeaway?
Well, so the obvious big takeaway is Game of Thrones getting 32 nominations for season 8. It was a divisive season. They got a lot of flack throughout. There was the coffee cup. There was the water bottle. More importantly.
Those are the only things that went wrong.
Yes. There was a lot of conversation about the writing. I think that wasn't there some story about how if you Google bad writers, the first thing that comes up now is Benioff and Weiss, which is very mean, by the way, the internet.
There was Nicolette Coster-Waldau defending them and talking about the Game
right.
of Thrones.
So generally speaking, the conversation, if you've been paying attention to the internet, is like Game of Thrones season 8 was bad. And then here come 32 nominations, the most nominations ever given to one season of television, which is pretty amazing. So HBO must be feeling pretty good right now. That's I guess the biggest story. A big story as well that is kind of heartwarming is much smaller, but Schitt's Creek got a whole lot of Emmy love and mm-hmm. has never gotten nominated before. It's a very adorable, like heartwarming comedy, and I think that a lot of people are very excited to see it getting its due.
Joanna, you wrote a story about the Game of Thrones haul, kind of pointing out a lot of the same things that Hillary did, that like despite the online backlash, it did fine. Do you chalk this up to just the Emmys liking what they like and wanting to do the same thing over and over again? Or is there something that we all got wrong that the Emmys got right?
No, I was personally, like, even though I agreed with a lot of the criticism of the final season, I never doubted that they would get a huge Emmy nomination haul and probably a huge Emmy nomination win. It just feels like the Television Academy has never been exactly on top of the same things that the fans or the critics have been on top of when they don't like a season. Like, there was one year, I talk about this a lot, Peter Dinklage is enormously talented, but there was like one year where they gave him an Emmy for a season that Tyrion did like basically nothing and was barely in it. And it just sort of felt like they weren't paying attention. And they were like, oh, Game of Thrones, that's a big show. Peter Dinklage, he's a star. Here you go. You know, and so like, I don't know. I didn't think it would hamper their ability to get all these nominations. I was like extraordinarily pleasantly surprised by some of the numbers. Cause you know, last year they broke the record getting 22. This year, as Hillary said, they got 32, and those 10 extra, like a lot of those are acting nominations, which is really fun. Cause like you've got first time nominee, Sophie Turner. Great. First time nominee, Alfie Allen, first time nominee, Gwendolyn Christie, Carice Van Houten in the like guest category. Like there's just like room for all these things beyond the like core, you know, the Lannister siblings have been nominated year after year, you know, and that's great. But like, just to like give these other people, Alfie Allen is just like, I think that's my big story of the day, Alfie Allen getting an Emmy nomination.
That one's like for Joanna specifically.
It's for me. So thanks to the Television Academy. I appreciate it. Yeah, it feels good. That nomination for me feels good. No, I, and another thing to note is one of the big criticisms, the major episodes that are nominated are The Long Night and The Iron Throne, both of which were heavily, you know, criticized. The Long Night criticized because people literally couldn't see it. And The Iron Throne is the finale criticized for, you know, a lot of different things.
I didn't check this. I probably should have. But Joanna, do you remember, is The Long Night up for cinematography?
It did not get nominated for cinematography. That the cinematography award went to The Iron Throne.
Okay. Because that would have been an amazing bit of trolling.
Well, it got nominated for editing, and like both the sound design awards went to The Iron Throne. Directing. They had an FYC screening of The Long Night at Grauman's Chinese Theater. And all the settings were correct for it. And it was on the big screen. It was in the dark theater. And you didn't have to deal with the HBO compression rate, which like sort of muddied everything, and everyone who saw it at that screening was like, it was a masterpiece. And like, even, you know, Sonia mentioned this, Nikolai Coster-Waldau was at this Game of Thrones convention this weekend, and he was like, okay, even I at home was like, who's that? Is that me? Is that Gwendolyn Christie? I can't see, you know. So like, he was like, yeah, I at home was really upset by what I saw. It was like a big piece of humble pie for us to like be like work really hard on this episode and go online and see all this backlash. And yeah, and then the Academy decided to award what they saw, which for many of them at that FYC screening was, you know, a masterpiece. So I just think it's funny because like even the highlights of the season, like things people agree on, like the Brienne knighting scene in A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, the second episode of the season, which a lot of people, well, or me at least, think is the best, was not nominated for anything. Oh. So like, it's just like, it got all these nominations, and it got all these nominations for things that I'm like, okay, Weiss and Benioff are the only writers that got nominated for this final season. Okay, that's not what I would have done, but okay, you know, we'll see. So
yeah, and going back to something that you just said, Joanna, about Peter Dinklage and his parade of nominations, especially the time that, you know, he won for one of his less active seasons. Something that Sonia said before we came here was that often it kind of seems like the Emmy voters see like six shows and they really like those six shows. And so they're just like, you know, well, let's give a nomination to everybody in here. Mm-hmm. And I think that there are years where that's more true and years where that's less true. But there's definitely, it seems like there's definitely some evidence of that in here.
This is the more year.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, to speak to some of the other shows that were nominated, This Is Us, Mandy Moore gets her first nomination alongside Sterling K. Brown and Milo Ventimiglia, who the Academy love, like, for reasons that are, like, fine, maybe.
There was a bunch of banter before they announced the nominations about Sterling K. Brown. Ken Jeong from The Masked Singer, My Favorite Show, and Darcy Carden from Barry and the Good Place. Okay, their banter went on for, like, I want to say 100
Ever.
Minutes.
Forever.
It was excruciating. But yeah, they were
filled
joking.
Filled with all these self-referential jokes about how excruciating it is. And I'm like,
yeah.
You can't do both.
It's like, you're not helping guys.
No, my takeaway from that was, I hope the Emmys don't have a host after all. If this is what it's going to be.
But and then so Fleabag, which got a ton of nominations, none for the male performers, which is like very interesting. But
boo! I mean, but yay for Fleabag, but that bums me out.
Not just
Phoebe. Oh, I thought you were just booing the concept of men.
Oh yeah, that's obviously that too.
That's actually yeah. So not just Phoebe Waller-Bridge, Sean Clifford, and Olivia Colman, who are regular cast members, but Kristin Scott Thomas in the guest role. She had a very cool guest role, cool monologue, and Fiona Shaw, who is literally in one scene where Fleabag goes to get therapy, and it's like 2 minutes long because she's not good at it. And Fiona Shaw says it's possible to fuck God, and that's it. She got an Emmy nomination for it.
And she got nominated for Killing Eve too, right?
She did, yeah.
Good year.
In the supporting role, yeah, yeah, yeah. And then,
Which is a much bigger part, yeah.
And then another show that just had like a huge spread of nominations is Barry, which, you know, a show that I love, but I am still sort of like reeling from the fact that Anthony Carrigan, who is NoHo Hank, Stephen Root, who's Fuchs, And like Henry Winkler, who already had like made, you know, never had an Emmy nomination and now won last year and now has a second one.
And Sarah Goldberg.
And even Sarah Goldberg, right. Like, it's just amazing how many minor performers, which really leads me to feel that like a lot of voters were not watching that many shows. They were watching maybe a handful of shows, and the biggest overlap is where the nominations hit.
Mm, so they definitely watched When They See Us.
Yeah.
We'll see. And how much they watched Fosse Verdon on top of that. It's like they picked one in each to obsess over. I think you're right.
Yeah. And there's also the kind of stalwarts that are still there year after year, even though it seems like their moment has kind of passed. Like, I was kind of surprised to see Viola Davis sneak in for actress in a drama when I feel like nobody's mentioned How to Get Away with Murder since she won, which was years ago.
But my take is that that's her Widow's nomination.
I mean... If Melissa McCarthy can win an Emmy for Bridesmaids, then Viola Davis can win an Emmy for Widows.
So nobody saw Widows, but everyone who did is in the Emmys Academy.
Matthew Correct. McConaughey won an Oscar for True Detective. So it all kind of cycles through. Yeah.
Hi, I'm Lale Arakoglu, host of Women Who Travel. Each story from our guests and listeners is totally unique and utterly personal. We love hearing about your first impressions when visiting someplace new.
My first trip to the Patagonia region was on the Argentine side. I couldn't believe the expansive territory. It's like being in Tibet. The emptiness and the harshness really, I found transformative.
Or a story told when safely back on dry land.
You know, things happened every single day. I ran out of gas on a jet ski in the middle of the ocean. And I was like, what if a sea creature comes to eat me? But then I'm delusional. I was like, I'll make friends with it and it won't eat me. And maybe I'll ride that back to shore.
That's how it works. Yeah. Join me, Lale Arakoglu, every week for more adventures on Women Who Travel, wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Is this where I get to talk about my favorite rule, which is the hanging episode rule?
Oh, yeah. For
eligibility. Tale. Like, there's a lot of confusion this morning in terms of, like, shows have to air within an eligibility window in order to be considered for series-wide nominations. But you can still get episode-specific nominations if you sneak in with a hanging episode rule, which means if you had enough episodes airing in the new eligibility window, you can sneak something in. And I think that's how Handmaid's Tale, right, got mm-hmm. a nomination or two in because of that. But Elizabeth Moss is ineligible because the bulk of Handmaid's Tale did not air in the eligibility window.
So weird.
So it'll have kind of another crack next year, right?
Right.
Because Elizabeth Moss and Handmaid's Tale could be nominated.
Season 3 will be eligible next year.
Right.
But it's just like, it's so confusing because like this makes the other thing that I always find so confusing about the Emmys is like when a show's first season is kind of nominated sometimes for a second season, if the second season is airing in the Emmy nomination window, you know what I mean? It's like, and viewer and voters are thinking about the season that's currently airing when they cast their vote for the first season. It's all very like muddy. It all feels muddier than the Oscars do. And I think that's because they don't hook it around a calendar year.
Not as muddy as the Grammys. Mm.
Sure.
I don't understand the Grammys at all.
Is that how Laverne Cox got nominated too? Was Orange is the New Black not eligible except for guest categories? Or is Orange is the New Black just irrelevant?
I think it's more that the last season of Orange is the New Black was irrelevant than... I mean, I think that maybe Netflix is kind of keeping its powder dry for that show's last season, which is about to premiere in a week. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think that maybe they were just kind of putting more effort behind, you know, the When They See Us, even Ozark. Yeah.
Ozark. Yeah. It's interesting because Netflix is really missing its like big power players, right? It's missing The Crown. It's missing like a good season of Orange is the New Black. And House of Cards is like in disgrace, right? And so it didn't have like its usual Emmy power players in those categories. And so it really, IndieWire did this great piece on like how many of its dollars it pushed behind Ozark. And it's 45.5% of its like marketing distribution went to Ozark.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Wow. So, and then Bodyguard 36%. And this, sorry, that's just for drama, but like still, that's like so much. And then like Narcos, little tiny bit, House of Cards, little tiny bit. But they were like, okay, we're going to do the Ozark push because Jason Bateman got some nominations last year. So they're like, we can push it to get it into the main category, which they did. Ozark got nominated, Bodyguard got nominated. But it was funny because I was like, I was seeing Ozark at the top of all these like Gold Derby prediction lists. And I was like, why? Because nobody talks about that show. Why? And then I read up about how many dollars. Like apparently, probably if I lived in LA, I wouldn't be why. I'd be like, sure, I see that billboard every quarter.
Exactly.
So yeah.
Well, you mentioned Bodyguard, which maybe is a good time to talk about some snubs because Joanna, we had talked last week about how you were really pushing Richard Madden not just for a nomination for Bodyguard but for a win, and it got the series nomination, but he didn't get nominated. How did that happen?
How embarrassing for me.
I mean,
no, it's all about me, right? No, I don't know. It seems like Sonia and I were talking about this a little bit this morning. It does. It feels like a choice, I think, is what Sonia said. Mm-hmm. It's like, and it's weird to me because like I think that should be flipped. I think Richard Madden is great in that series, and I think that series is spotty at best. And so I'm just like shocked for it to get a series nomination and not a nomination for Madden, who like holds it all together. Like it starts really strong and then it really falls apart halfway through. And so it seems like a real miscarriage of justice for, like, I would prefer a blanket snub to this particular combination of nominations. So
that's very interesting.
I was surprised that Homecoming, the Amazon series, didn't get nominations, especially not for Julia Roberts, because, you know, it doesn't feel like that long ago when a giant celebrity made a TV show, it was a big deal. Mm-hmm. And it was like, oh my God, can you believe? It doesn't feel like, you know, they're stooping to do TV, but it still feels like a surprise. And yeah, Homecoming wasn't particularly buzzy. I think that maybe it kind of had a brief moment and then sort of receded into the general scrum of peak TV. But still, you know, when Julia Roberts can't get an Emmy nomination, that just shows how competitive the market is and just how many shows there are.
Yeah, it is interesting because Fleabag kind of launched Amazon to a good year, you know, with Maisel and Fleabag. They've got two back to back.
Yeah, all the Maisel nominations. It got the most nominations after Game of Thrones, which I guess just shows Sonia that you and I are the only people who didn't like season two. This is surprising to me.
I don't understand what they see in it. But this really does go back to this whole thing about they're locked in, they're watching the show, and then it's like there's just so much more room to give them some leeway, I guess, with quality, with talent, with style.
It still looks beautiful. I'll give them that.
Yeah.
Well, and they also nominated, I don't think Luke Kirby got a nomination for the first season, but he plays Lenny Bruce and is really great. Like it gives room for the deep bench of people who are on that show.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah,
that's
for
true.
Sure.
It's not just Rachel Brosnahan and Alex Borstein.
And actually, speaking of House of Cards, Robin Wright and Michael Kelly both got nominated, which again, I think indicates that like, even when these shows are like disgraced or ending or canceled or whatever, when people are locked in, when voters are locked in, they're still watching these shows they care about.
Yeah.
I think that was kind of like I was somewhat expecting Robin Wright to get a nomination as a sort of like, good job you for soldiering on. I don't know.
Like there the Rami Malek Bohemian Rhapsody thing, like you survived the bad man nomination.
You got rid of the bad man and you carried on. You too, Michael Kelly, you did it. I don't know. I did want to talk about something that Mike, in Mike's absence, I want to talk about something that Mike loves to talk about, which is the like double triple threats or whatever that get nominated. Mm-hmm. So Jason Bateman getting nominated for acting and directing, Natasha Lyonne getting nominated for acting and writing for Russian Doll, Phoebe Waller-Bridge acting and writing, Fleabag, Bill Hader directing, writing, and acting, Barry. And these triple double threats are the people that Mike likes to say often win. Like it's why you see like sort of like a Donald Glover or something, you know, like that when someone has so many talents, brimming over with so many talents, that the Television Academy often likes to award them with a win. But do we think in that actress category, in the comedy series actress category, does anyone have an actual shot against Julia Louis-Dreyfus, or is this just like sort of the victory lap for Julia and Veep?
I think that the moon would have to crash into the sun before anybody won that Emmy besides Julia Louis-Dreyfus.
Yeah, it's really hard to imagine.
Especially because she didn't win last year. Like, Rachel Brosnahan got her year to try it, so it doesn't feel as exhausting as it might have if it were just a nonstop streak.
Yeah.
Like, it's not just the Veep is great. It's not just that Julia Louis-Dreyfus is great. It's that it was its last season. It's that she had cancer. It's like,
yeah,
there
the
are,
personal.
The narrative is all yeah. there. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
The lineup of actresses who are nominated, like, it's such an amazing group of people. Like, it is just exciting to think about them all in one place. And, like, Natasha Lyonne talking to Phoebe Waller-Bridge.
Mm-hmm. Talking to Catherine O'Hara.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Catherine O'Hara getting nominated. But, I mean, Hillary, you mentioned Schitt's Creek at the top. But, like, we talked a little bit about it last week as a show that kind of got bumped by Netflix, having aired on Pop for a while. But just seeing how much the Emmys really jumped on board with Schitt's Creek was so exciting.
And seeing like three, like if you look down the, you know, the Television Academy sends out this little spreadsheet, which is what I'm currently looking at, which has like, you know, the network, blah, blah, just to see Pop TV in there makes me really excited for some reason.
It's incredible.
Though, I mean, like it seems ungrateful to be like three nominees for Schitt's Creek, but they missed Dan Levy. But like, I don't know. It seems sad to not have Dan Levy nominated.
This is like me and Andrew Scott. Like, you know, you gave us so much, but couldn't you have just given us one more thing?
Also Andrew Scott. Yeah, exactly.
It was really, I mean, and Katie, we were talking about this on Twitter, but I was kind of shocked just looking at the grid of pictures to realize that all of the comedy actresses were all white women. I think that Felicia Rashad was nominated for something, and that was like the only performer I could see that was a person of color. And then like Sandra Oh is nominated in that
Viola
category.
Davis.
Oh, Viola Davis. So that's on the drama side.
But Anthony Anderson is nominated for actor.
And Sterling K. Brown. And, yeah. Right. But so, yeah. So Anthony
it's a pretty
Anderson
white year.
On the comedy side, and then totally just white women on the other side. That's kind of surprised me.
Right, but then you see When They See Us, like, coming, like, there's a lot of nominations for When They See Us, which is, you know, Ava DuVernay's Netflix, it's in the limited series category, right? But that is, like, bringing some non-whiteness to the board, and then also, like, a Billy Porter nomination, which is freaking great.
Oh,
I'm so excited about that.
And Mahershala Ali, who was nominated, even though True Detective was not, except for Outstanding Opening Credits.
Yes, my favorite category.
Really?
Yes.
So it got two nominations for Sterling K. Brown and Opening Credits.
The opening credits were so good this year.
They're so good. Really good. Good stuff.
And also, I also want to shout out a category that we haven't talked about, which is animation, which Sony and I were both thrilled to see BoJack Horseman finally get nominated for Outstanding Animated Program. It's
Yay.
The best show on TV.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so the nominees in that category are really interesting. There are some categories where it seems like just the same things get nominated year after year after year. Variety Talk Series is one of them. Now, at this point, the lineup seems pretty set. And in animation, you know, it's pretty typical to see Bob's Burgers and to see The Simpsons and to see South Park, which didn't get nominated this year. But there's finally a couple of new shows breaking in. Big Mouth also snuck in there, which is great. And I don't know, it's nice to see that there are ways in which the Emmys are paying attention to newer things.
Yeah. So, like, for example, also Pen 15, Hulu's, like, kind of middle school comedy from comedians Maya Erskine and Anna Conkle got a writing nomination, which is just, like, so exciting that it could get enough of a groundswell behind it to get a nomination. I mean, when I go into the Emmys, like, I'm never expecting, like, my super true faves to really get honored, whether that's, like, you know, Rami on Hulu or, like, High Maintenance on HBO, which are, like, I know that they're indie and they're sort of niche, but then to see Pen 15 get honored, to see Big Mouth get honored, this is, like, so exciting. And oh, and Documentary Now, the Sondheim episode of Documentary Now. I mean, these are like really like such successful little nuggets, little gems that
and
the
Marie
Emmys
Kondo.
Are finding.
Marie Kondo.
Oh, that's
for reality
I
show.
I think
host.
Last week I talked about how I wanted Marie Kondo to have more Emmy buzz, and she did. I just didn't know it. And she's nominated in the category that also includes RuPaul and then Amy Poehler and Nick Offerman as a team. Like, what a dream group of people.
Getting those people in a room.
I want Marie Kondo to come to the Emmys and do her bow, you know, do like how she bows to the house. I want her to do it, and then I want her to clean house.
Yeah.
She's going to like touch Jason Bateman and say, "You don't bring me joy."
Yeah, I love that.
Also, in reality, I was really excited that Nailed It made it into the competition lineup. I believe that's the first streaming reality series to make it into the category, though I really wish Nicole Byer had also gotten a host nomination, since she has brought me more joy on television than I think anything else this year.
And RuPaul's Drag Race got 14 nominations throughout the reality categories.
Yeah, that's the reality juggernaut now.
That's just incredible. The fact that that show turned into the unlikely nominee into like an awards juggernaut is like amazing.
And then when we were talking about it last week, I was really worried that Sharp Objects was going to get completely overlooked because it has been sort of muted reception. It's been getting some nominations, but not like the high accolades that I really wanted it to. But both Amy Adams and Patricia Clarkson got in there. It got 8 nominations. So the Television Academy has not forgotten about Sharp Objects. And like that Amy Adams performance,
I'm going to personally start screaming at Academy voters until they vote for her. That's my new strategy.
Exactly.
It's such a good performance, and it's, I mean,
why
and
do you
look,
guys hate Vanity Fair cover star Patricia Arquette?
I do not hate Patricia Arquette. That's the problem. I really like Patricia Arquette too. I just felt like Amy Adams' performance in Sharp Objects just like really like rattled me and got under my skin, and I just feel like that show, that limited series did so many interesting things that kind of got forgotten about. It's really been ignored.
Absolutely.
By the Academy. Yeah,
and I mean, Patricia Arquette has like a pile of awards.
She does have a pile.
And Amy Adams famously does it.
She has a pile of nominations.
I mean, justice for Amy Adams.
Yes.
Yeah.
Marie Kondo could like come in and tell Patricia Arquette how to like tidy up her awards. And then she would look at Amy Adams' empty shelf and be like, this is sad. You need an award.
I mean, I really love how much fan fiction the awards is already setting us up for, because we have Catherine O'Hara. We have Marie Kondo. Like, we can just start to like really build narratives in our minds.
That's what television is for.
Exactly. Yeah.
I forgot about Schitt's Creek's most exciting nomination, which is contemporary costume.
Oh my God. Right. Yeah. Yeah, I saw that. Yeah.
So I'm really hoping Moira Rose's wardrobe gets the win for that.
I mean,
that.
If Catherine O'Hara showed up to the Emmys in character, I think we would all spontaneously combust.
It would be so amazing. And then she could do a performance from Cabaret.
Oh my God.
Ugh.
I'm so happy that we've decided to just fully lean into writing fan fiction.
Do you guys want to start leaning toward potential winners? Like, obviously, we're going to spend a while talking about a lot of these. But does anything about the nominations tally tell us anything about who we think is going to win, other than, I guess, that Game of Thrones and Veep, as expected, are still massive contenders?
Well, something that we actually haven't talked about yet, but that going back to Amy Adams and Patricia Arquette, is the leading actress in a limited series or TV movie category is really brutal, because Michelle Williams is so good in Fosse Verdon.
She's really good.
And, like, I would be so thrilled for any of those three women to win, but, like, I mean, this is also just because, you know, it's about musical theater and that's a topic that I care about maybe more than escaping from prisons and self-harm. But Fosse Verdon is so good and Michelle Williams is amazing in it. She just does this amazing transformation as Gwen Verdon. I don't know. The show got a lot of nominations, but it still feels like it doesn't have quite the same momentum behind it that I think you might need in order to actually get those nominations to translate into wins, but pulling for Michelle Williams.
I think Chernobyl stole Fosse Verdon's momentum, because I don't think anyone was really expecting that series to do as well as it did, and it got 19 nominations, which is so crazy when you think about the fact that it is like led by like old suffering from radiation Soviet men who are like suffering through a hellish landscape. Like, it's kind of amazing.
I mean,
that
I guess that speaks to our time. We'd rather watch bleak, like, right. Russian suffering.
Or When They See Us, which is one of the harder things to watch. I mean, it's so necessary, but I had to start and stop the first episode 15 times before I finished it. And it's just really interesting to see those two up against Escape at Dannemora, Sharp Objects, Fosse Verdon, which feel a little bit more like prestige awards bait types of programs. It's a really interesting time, guys.
Who would you guys, like, what would you guys say would win for limited series at this point? Because I'm, like, seeing that, because I thought When They See Us had the strongest showing because it had all those acting nominations, but Chernobyl had the highest tally. But it makes it hard for me to think of who would be the favorite in that lineup.
Yeah, I feel like Jared Harris wins actor, maybe, and When They See Us wins series.
Yeah, I think When They See Us has to win series.
That's how I feel, too. I mean, I think it's such a, just because it's the relevance of it is very hard to, because even Chernobyl, which also has relevance, is not as relevant as When They See
Us. Yeah, and especially with politics, I mean, who knows where we're going to be politically in September, but I can see politics and Trump stuff, yeah, making people want to vote for When They See Us, not just on the merits of the series, but as a kind of like rebuke of the Trump administration.
You're saying he's not going away before September? I'm disappointed to hear you say that.
Well, and I feel like there were real world consequences from When They See Us, and I think that like the Television Academy likes to say like, look, behold the power of TV.
There were real world consequences of all those influencers going to Chernobyl.
I'm absolutely.
Taking selfies.
The one thing that we should consider, like, even with all these Game of Thrones nominations, the fact that 11 of those nominations are in acting categories means that they could easily cancel each other out. Right. You know, so it'll be, you know, there's three supporting actor nominations and four supporting actress nominations, which is crazy. So, like, you know, hey, Fiona Shaw for Killing Eve might get in there because all the Game of Thrones actresses cancel each other out or something like that. So I don't know. Maybe too many nominations is a problem sometimes.
I mean, it's hard to imagine they wouldn't split the vote in those very full categories.
Yeah, I mean, or it's just everybody is like, well, Peter Dinklage, why not?
Right, yeah. Poor Alfie Allen.
But, like, if it's Peter Dinklage again, it's like, why? I know he was very good this season.
He's
but it's
really
like
good in the finale.
But he has many, you know? Yeah. It's
Condo
fine.
Those Emmys, Peter Dinklage.
Give it to Nikolai or Alfie. And, like, you know, Lena Headey, if Lena Headey wins, which she hasn't ever won for Game of Thrones, if she wins, it will certainly be, like, a series-long sort of award.
I mean, yeah, she really deserves
very
it.
Much earns. Yeah,
for the series. Joanna, you'll have more insight on this because I was kind of disappointed, not necessarily that Emilia Clarke and Kit Harington were nominated, but that they were nominated in lead. Like, I understand why sort of conceptually, but I sort of felt like I always feel like the who's a lead performer and who's a supporting performer on Game of Thrones is, like, way more complicated than...
Well, yeah. So they submitted in lead last year and got snubbed. They both didn't make it in when they submitted in lead last year. And so I was expecting them to, like, tuck tail and go, like, bop back down to the supporting. But they're like, nope, let's do it again. But I think I would agree that the way that this season was framed... It really was a Jon and Daenerys season. So, like, this season more than last season when they tried it, I'd be like, yeah, they're the leads of this end game of Game of Thrones. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But neither of them is going to win.
I mean, I don't know. Emilia Clarke did so much with so little.
She did.
I might be tempted to vote for her, given everything that she had to, like, try to make sense.
I'd love it if she won and just got up there and was like, okay, here's how I really felt about everything that happened in this final season.
That would be beautiful. Yeah, lead actress in a drama is tough. It's Emilia Clarke, Jodie Comer, Viola Davis, Laura Linney, Mandy Moore, Sandra Oh, and Robin Wright.
Man, the fact that Sandra Owen and Jodie Comer are going up against each other is another really interesting thing. I mean, and I'm, like, very excited for both of them. I think they're both fantastic performers, but it's impossible. It's very difficult to imagine that they would not split the vote against each other.
Although, doesn't Sandra Oh have the benefit of being the more famous one and having been on television for longer? And, like, she got the nomination last year, she didn't win. I feel like if I wanted to reward Killing Eve, I would easily go for her. But I think in the second season, it became more of a two-hander, right?
It's funny because I would give it to Jodie Comer because Sandra Oh got nominated the first season and got the Globe, you know. So it's like, okay, we've acknowledged Sandra Oh, but Jodie Comer is just so incredible on that show.
I wonder if there will be like a bigger groundswell of support for Sandra Oh, though, just like because she didn't win yet last year, but her nomination was such a big deal and was so meaningful to so many people. And I don't know if that might put more fire behind her this year.
Absolutely. I mean, it could. Very well could. There's so many factors at play. And, like, I think the narrative of, in the lead actor category, the narrative of, like, is this finally Bob Odenkirk's year after having been nominated so many times?
Man, I hope so.
It would be really fun if that were the case. So, I mean, like, I learned my lesson last year because, like, everyone was like, okay, it's finally Matthew Rhys's year. And I was like, nah, they're never going to do it. They're just never going to do it. And then they did it. And I was like, okay, I can get on board the it's finally so-and-so's year narrative. Absolutely. Why
the
not?
The Academy's turned really receptive to us, haven't they? Like, I
they're listening.
Like the fact that Schitt's Creek and Fleabag got as much attention as they did, I do feel like we're really seeing a more open Academy. I think they're innovative.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if it's the finally his year narrative, I would also like to put in a plug for Jonathan Banks and supporting actor. Because he's been doing such great work for so long. Mike, what does the man have to do?
And I have to say, in this season, his arc was devastating. If you guys saw Better Call Saul, there was like Germans and he had to kill one of the Germans. And it was just, you knew it was going to happen the whole time. And it was still so heartrending. He's amazing.
So yeah, if the Game of Thrones guys cancel themselves out, maybe then it will leave room for Jonathan Banks finally.
Yeah,
I think the year that I always harp on that Peter Dinklage won that I don't think he should have won is the year I really wanted Jonathan Banks to win.
Oh. That's why you got so mad about it.
Is the year he gave his speech about his son, and I was like, oh no,
I can't even hear about it.
Win, yeah. And then Peter Dinklage won, and I'm like, you got one already, bud. What are you doing here? Anyway,
I want to call attention to one like hilarious category, which is outstanding variety special pre-recorded, and the nominees are Hannah Gadsby's Nanette, Homecoming, a film by Beyonce, Springsteen on Broadway, Wanda Sykes, her special Not Normal, and last but not least, Carpool Karaoke, When Corden Met McCartney, live from Liverpool.
Right, that special everybody knows.
I think the reason I like it so much is I feel like it also just, like, Nanette is such a, like, it's like this weird stand-up special that's, like, also kind of performance art and also kind of anti-comedy. And then there's Homecoming, like, Baychella, literally Baychella. Then there's Springsteen on Broadway. Bruce, and then Carpool Karaoke and Wanda Sykes just rounding it out. There's a lot there. There's a lot in competition with each other. TV's weird.
There's also, like, I just want to note, because I think it's so weird that one of Game of Thrones' 32 nominations is for a VR experience that they created where you get to fight zombies. So, you know, Emmys.
Oh, and like, I think Jonathan Banks is also nominated for like a Better Call Saul web series.
Yeah. Better Call Saul employee training is nominated. Hack into Broad City.
Yeah. Yes, that was it. Employee training. And I was just like, I didn't even know he did this extra thing on the side. But it's totally the Emmys. I believe that RuPaul's Drag Race is nominated for like the show itself and then also for Untucked, which is like its discussion show that always seemed like part of the actual show to me. But I guess they're different enough that they can both be nominated for Emmys.
What a time to be alive.
What a time to be alive.
Abby and Alana also got acting nominations for short form comedy or drama series because it's a strange world out there. Also, Rent Live is nominated opposite the Oscars and the Norman Lear special.
Rent Live has like six nominations. But my question is it for the dress rehearsal which aired or for the...
Oh, my God.
No, I'm just kidding. It's obviously for what aired. But what a weird night that was at theater. Remember that?
Yeah, Rent Live gets nominated for Most Broken Leg.
Like, how did they even get... It's such a weird... That's the weirdest category, because it's just showing up guarantees you a nomination. Like, the Oscars didn't have a host. Nomination!
Yeah,
like,
I wish that I could defend Rent Live's inclusion as a longtime Rent person, but no, that was... That should not be there.
It was a special moment in time.
Well, remember Jesus Christ Superstar Live got a bunch of acting nominations too, so it could be even more present.
But that was great.
Yeah, that was great. The difference is that Jesus Christ Superstar actually was live.
Yeah. That's true. Yeah. And had John Legend.
And had good performances. And did not have Valentina not jumping on a table. Not to get too far into Rent Live.
Do you guys want to close it out by just picking some personal favorites? Like, we'll have lots of time to stump for who we want, but as of today, who showed up on the list that you're going to say, all right, it will make my heart leap if you manage to win for this?
I don't know if you know this about me, Katie, but I'm a big fan of Alfie Allen's work on Game of Thrones.
I've never heard you discuss this before.
This is the first time I'm saying it. Anyway, yeah, I'm just going to, like, from now until September 22nd, I'm just going to, like, be writing Alfie Allen's name over and over again in, like, my dream journal. So there you go.
Yeah, the Emmy voters read that, I think. So
I send a copy to them once a month when I start a fresh one.
I'm picking my personal cheering section for Maya Rudolph as the judge in The Good Place, who's nominated in the guest actress in the comedy series opposite Fiona Shaw and Kristen Scott Thomas for Fleabag, Sandra Oh and Emma Thompson for hosting SNL, and then Jane Lynch on Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. It's kind of a murderer's row. I have no idea what Maya Rudolph's odds would be, but I love her on The Good Place so much.
Yeah, I'm going to put in a vote for The Good Place itself, which got into the comedy series category. It's the best. It's certainly the best comedy on network television, one of the best comedies on TV, period. And also, I will plug Ted Danson for lead actor in a comedy because he's so great.
The comedy lineup is so good.
Comedies right now are so much better than dramas. I'm just going to say it.
Mm. I would say that I'm very excited for BoJack Horseman to be nominated, and I hope that it, I don't know if I don't actually know the stakes of the Best Animated category race this year, but I...
Well, they're at the Creative Arts Emmys, so the stakes are not that high.
I guess they're probably not that high. But if they could win, I would love that. I'm also just really excited for Catherine O'Hara to be nominated, to return to this continuing Catherine O'Hara at the Emmys thing, but I just think that it's amazing. I would love it if she... I mean, she's not actually going to win, but I would love... I'm just really happy she's there. I'm also really excited that Stephen Root was nominated for Barry, because it's his first acting award ever. I'm sorry if I already said
what?
This before.
Wow, really?
Yeah, it's his first.
News Radio Stephen Root's acting nomination?
It is his first Emmy nomination, which is insane. Wow. It's the same way that Henry Winkler's
like Henry
first
Winkler,
Emmy nomination.
Yeah.
Right. It's like, it's interesting that this is like Bill Hader's wheelhouse, is like finding these underserved actors. And yet also like, oh my God, Stephen Root totally deserves an Emmy. Like, this is amazing.
Who would pick, him or NoHo Hank?
Ugh.
Anthony Carrigan is so good.
It's so weird what he's doing, and it's so, so good. I don't know. It's hard because also, like, Barry requires its actors to be funny and then also to be quite serious, and I think that Anthony Carrigan makes me laugh the most, but Stephen Root, like, sends fear down my spine in that show. So those are both good performances, but I don't know exactly which is which.
Well, they'll all lose to Tony Hale, so.
Yeah, that's,
which do you pick to lose the least to Tony Hale?
I don't know. The Kominsky method keeps surprising us, so who knows what Alan Arkin might do in that lineup, too.
The Emmys are not the Globes, though, so.
Yeah, thank you.
Hopefully we can just keep that in mind.
Yeah, we do keep having to remind ourselves of that, because I do think the Globes take up a lot of mental real estate on these things for some reason.
I was really surprised and happy that Margaret Qualley was nominated for Fosse Verdon. I just spotted that, and I just wanted to say something about that. She was great on The Leftovers, and she was really good as Anne Ranking in Ranking. Am I saying that
Ranking,
right?
Ranking, yeah.
Anne Ranking yeah. In Fosse Verdon, and I just we're going to be seeing more of her because she's in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. So it's kind of cool that she's getting her moment.
I was thinking that Fosse Verdon didn't have as many acting nominations as it should, but then I couldn't figure out, like, I mean. You've got, like, Norbert Leo Butz as Paddy Chayefsky. Like, I don't know. Is there any like, major snubs there? Or did I just want more for Fosse Verdon, like Hillary?
Well, Lin-Manuel Miranda didn't make it in for his one-minute cameo as Roy Scheider, which I am shocked by, considering the various awards-giving bodies' propensity for awarding Lin-Manuel Miranda for showing up.
I think he's already got an Emmy, though. So he's on his way to an EGOT, regardless.
I think all that's missing is the O.
Wow.
I thought that Bandersnatch getting nominated was interesting. I don't know if we want to talk about that, but it's interactive. I mean, has that happened before? Have we nominated an interactive game-ish thing into a TV movie category before? I don't think we have.
It's interesting that Netflix had the money to put behind it to kind of maybe overcome any concerns anybody had about it. I don't know that the TV movie category was super competitive this year, if indicated by My Dinner with Hervé, a movie I completely forgot existed getting in there. So maybe it was like something that people had heard of and they were kind of willing to overlook any like weird structural stuff.
It at least makes more sense there than previous Black Mirror episodes somehow getting nominated as TV movies, which right. when they were episodes of a TV show.
It's true. Bandersnatch at least does stand alone. However, it also has several branching endings and not really a plot. So I don't know. It's hard to say, right? It's kind of interesting. I feel like it's the Academy going postmodern.
All right, well, we will be talking about the Emmys plenty between now and mid-September when the Emmy Awards are handed out. And Sonia and Hillary, thank you for joining us to help sort through all this. I feel like there's so many things we didn't even get to talk about, which I guess is what the next few weeks are for. In the meantime, you can find all of us writing about the Emmy nominations at vanityfair.com. And you can find Little Gold Men on Twitter at Little Gold Men. And on our own, I'm at Katie Rich. Joanna?
Joe wrote this.
And Sonia?
Sonia Soraya.
And Hillary?
Hillabuster with two R's.
This week's episode was edited and produced by Brett Fuchs, and this week's award for the most hyperbole goes to Hillary Busis.
The moon would have to crash into the sun before anybody won that Emmy besides Julia Louis-Dreyfus.
Hi, I'm Lale Arakoglu, host of Women Who Travel. Each story from our guests and listeners is totally unique and utterly personal. We love hearing about your first impressions when visiting someplace new.
My first trip to the Patagonia region was on the Argentine side. I couldn't believe the expansive territory. It's like being in Tibet. The emptiness and the harshness, really, I found transformative.
Or a story told when safely back on dry land.
You know, things happened every single day. I ran out of gas on a jet ski in the middle of the ocean. And I was like, what if a sea creature comes to eat me? But then I'm delusional. I was like, I'll make friends with it and it won't eat me. And maybe I'll ride that back to shore.
That's how it works.
Yeah.
Join me, Lale Arakoglu, every week for more adventures on Women Who Travel, wherever you listen to your podcasts.